United States v. Causey. Mr. Woodward.
May it please the court, counsel for the government. My name is Brian Woodward. I represent the appellant Randall Causey in this criminal appeal. Your honors, we claim four evidentiary errors, the cumulative effect of which denied Mr. Causey a
bail. Find the photographs in the record.
Pardon me?
The photographs.
The exhibits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're
complaining about the admission of these photographs.
Right.
I'm asking where are the photographs that we can look at them.
My understanding that the court reporter transferred them to the appellate clerk for consideration by this court on appeal.
Well, I don't know. I haven't found them.
I haven't seen them either.
With all due respect, however, in the event that that is not the case, I would request permission to
Was that a request that you made? I'm just curious. Did you make a request to the
court
reporter? You made the request?
To include the exhibits.
Because that's not
part
the
of the
normal
record.
Yeah, because that's not the normal practice.
Right.
Okay.
Because obviously that's one of the biggest issues, one of the biggest evidentiary errors.
Why don't you just put them in your brief?
As part of the appendix?
Yeah.
I didn't want to duplicate the record.
I don't understand. If a central issue in a case is visual, why don't you put the photographs in the brief? So the judges can look at them and, you know, make a judgment.
Again, I didn't want to duplicate the record.
Why? I don't understand. It's much easier for us to read something in the briefs than to go digging into the record, especially if there's nothing to find at the end of the digging.
The photographs are voluminous, and I thought it was...
Forget it. What do you mean voluminous? I thought there were nine houses that were photographed. Is that correct?
Referred to in the brief, there are nine houses, but within those group exhibits, there are multiple photographs of these houses. The interior, the exterior, different portions. For instance, in two of the exhibits, exhibit 25 and 44, I believe they are, there's nothing in the photograph other than a public auction sign. They're not even photographs of the houses themselves.
So Judge Posner is not suggesting that you submit that kind of photo. What he's saying is just so for the future, you should include that. We don't have any problem with duplication, because with the number of cases we're reading, just make it part of your brief. That's all.
I understand.
You can move on to.
Yes.
Let me ask you Mr. Causey's best defense was here. Was it that he had no idea it was illegal to tell a lender that one was doing rehab work on a property when one was in actuality pocketing the money? Or that he had no idea that all the fraudulent promises that he made to buyers were in fact fraudulent? I'm trying to figure out what would this man's best defense be?
I think there were two theories that the government propounded for liability in this case for wire fraud. The first being that the lenders were duped by false invoices that were submitted. It's clear from the record, and I think the government would agree with this, that Mr. Causey had no knowledge how much these false invoices were for, when they were submitted. Sheila Chandler, who testified, who was the admitted leader of this conspiracy, testified that she prepared all of those documents herself unilaterally, secretively, and therefore none of the others in the conspiracy had any knowledge that this was being done. The second theory propounded by the government is that Mr. Causey recruited buyers for these properties and basically lied to them.
Right.
One of those lies being the value of the properties. Well, the problem is we have photographs that were taken 5-6 years after the supposed transactions that are not indicative of the condition of the properties, and the government admits this. The government repeatedly throughout the
record. How was the jury deceived? I don't understand.
If you look,
wasn't this brought out in front of the jury that these were not photos from the relevant time period?
It was brought out in front of the jury, and in response to that, I have two comments. Number one, if we're going to permit irrelevant evidence in and then say, defendant, you can clear that up through cross-examination, I think we're playing lip service to Rule 401 and 402 of the Rules of Evidence, because, first of all, under 402, we know relevant evidence is admissible. Irrelevant evidence is not admissible. Then we have to refer to 401. What is relevant evidence? And we know relevant evidence is something that makes a fact more or less probable, A, and B, is of consequence in the matter that we're dealing with. Well, pictures of public auction signs and stripped aluminum siding off of houses and trees growing through porches some 6 years after the relevant event don't fit within those definitions. So I don't think it's fair to say, well, we let them know about this irrelevant evidence because it didn't meet the definition, but that's okay. That's paying lip service to the rules of evidence.
What's the harm? I mean, it's a little strange, but if you actually say, well, these pictures are irrelevant, but we thought you'd enjoy seeing them, right? How would that be? I mean, that would be silly, but why would that be prejudicial?
The prejudice is the government's position was that the condition of these houses was misconveyed to the potential buyers. So you show them photographs.
I know, but if you tell them these are photographs taken years after, then what is the prejudice?
Because the prejudice is we don't know at what stage in the game after the fact they got to this position. Some of these photographs show weeds in the front yard 3 to 4 feet high. And the contention by the government all along was he misrepresented the condition of these houses. And clearly, we had appraisals. The appraiser who performed the appraisals was called. He testified. All the information could have been brought out, including photographs of the houses at the time the appraisals were done, through those appraisals. These photographs weren't needed. They were irrelevant.
You say there are photographs at the time of the appraisal?
Several of the appraisals, yes. And I can't say unilaterally all of them do.
Why didn't you put them into evidence? They'd help your case.
Well, there were strategic reasons that we didn't want to do that.
What strategic reason? If you have evidence that helps your case and knocks out the government's photos, why don't you present it?
I think we were better served by relying upon the government's failure to present that evidence, quite honestly.
I don't understand.
So the appraisers testified?
He did. Okay. One appraiser.
Uh-huh. So was he shown he was shown, I take it, some of these photos that were, after-the-fact photos?
No, I think all the after-the-fact photos, as I recall, were examined by two of the buyers.
So then what would prevent you from showing him the photos that were already going to go in on the government's side and having him say this is not the condition it was when I did the appraisal?
Again,
you don't want to put in the actual photos that he took at the time, which could be relevant depending on what your theory of defense is.
Again, saying these are not accurate, there's nothing to say. What did it look like at the time, other than it says that these are inaccurate?
Unless you asked him, you would just say, well, what's the difference from the time when you took the appraisal and these photos? And he could say, well, there weren't weeds growing there. The weeds weren't 3 feet high. When I went, it was X or Y.
And that just goes to show that they were irrelevant to begin with, Your Honor.
Well, I have to tell you that I put myself in the place of the jury, and I thought it was very unusual to be involved in the buying and selling of houses and not have any photographic record. And I was thinking, gosh, I guess maybe the jury felt that the defendant didn't want to submit his own photos because they wouldn't have been much more helpful. So, I mean, I think it is sort of an important point.
Mr. Cousy had no involvement as far as dealing with the homes. He recruited buyers. That's all he did. So he would not have any photographs. The only other matter I wanted to mention
that there was defrauding of these investors. You don't question that, do you?
That they were defrauded?
Well, yes, obvious. I mean, you sell these people a house as an investment at a very high price, but you say, well, you know, it's a good investment because we're going to fix it up. And they don't fix it up. So that's the fraud. Now, are you saying he didn't know about this? He didn't know the fraud?
I don't think the evidence that the government presented, if you consider the opinion testimony of Sheila Chandler, and if the court should determine that that was inappropriately tendered to the jury, if you consider the failure of Mr. Kovachkov's testimony to give the basic office procedures, which the court determined to be expert opinion testimony.
Yeah, well, it was expert opinion testimony. He wasn't an occurrence witness because he didn't know anything about he had not participated in any of these transactions.
For basic office procedures, these were rote mechanical procedures that he instituted within his office. That's all that was asked of him, and somehow that morphed by the district court, into industry standards, and him testifying as to industry standards. That's not what he was asked. That's not what he was going to testify to. They were basic mechanical functions that he was asked. That along, and I see my time is up, but the real issue we have is with the sentencing issue, and I know there are two divergent lines of authority concerning whether you have to control a participant or not. That's the Robertson case, I believe, cited by both parties in their briefs. Under either of those, Mr. Causey certainly wasn't a leader, organizer, supervisor, or manager, and I think the case has to be remanded at the very least so that the court can reconsider actually the minor participant role and not the leadership enhancement. That should be reversed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Woodward. Ms. Acosta?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Jill Coster on behalf of the government. I'll start with the argument or the issue that the Court raised with defense counsel first, the photographs that were admitted into evidence in this case. There were 25 houses listed in the indictment in this conspiracy, and the buyers who testified, some of them purchased 4 houses in a single day. The conspirators who testified, 2 different co-conspirators testified against the defendant. And when those individuals testified, they had trouble keeping the houses straight. Government counsel had trouble keeping the 25 houses straight. The court will recall that all of those sales of 25 houses took place within 1 year's time. And the conspirators did not spend a great deal of time focusing on any individual house. They were busy hustling buyers in and arranging, doctoring documents and arranging for these houses to sell. So the photographs aided the witnesses in recalling particular houses. The government marked
contemporary photographs of the houses. Contemporary with the transactions?
No, Your Honor, no. The appraisal would include, at best, a photograph of the front of the house. And, in fact, when he was called by the defense to testify, the appraiser admitted he didn't take inside pictures of the houses unless he noticed recent rehab work done in the house. And, in fact, in this case, there was no recent rehab work done in the house. So when the government began to prepare for trial, starting a couple of years in advance of trial, when we were investigating the case, We tried to seek out photographs that were contemporaneous with these sales. None existed. We went to current buyers if there was somebody living in the house. Many of the houses have since been demolished completely. But we went to current buyers, owners, and said, do you have any photographs of what it looked like when you bought it? These houses were never placed on MLS. There weren't photographs taken, you know, in the open market to try to sell a house as you would normally expect in a real estate transaction. So we used what we had, which is what law enforcement was asked, go photograph as much of this house as you can document. Sometimes they weren't able to gain entry to the house because it was boarded up. Sometimes they got permission from the city to enter onto a property and photograph it, and so that's what they did. They documented it. The government, for better or worse, marked as an exhibit all photographs of every house in the scheme and moved to admit all of those photographs. We didn't call out any photographs to try to misrepresent the appearance of the houses. And when the issue was raised by defense counsel during trial as to whether these houses, the photographs, are misrepresenting the appearance of the house at the time, the government bent over backwards to make sure that the jury knew these photographs were taken later. We even created during trial a chart that listed the address of each house, the date of the sale involved in this scheme, and then the date that it was photographed, so that the jury, there would be no confusion. And we had previously had witnesses testify to the dates the houses were photographed, but Judge Lozano doesn't allow note-taking in his courtroom, and we were worried that the jury wouldn't be able to remember the dates. So we even put into evidence a chart to no objection by defense, so the jury would be able to keep it straight.
I'd like to take you somewhere else.
Okay.
I'd like to talk to you about Ms. Chandler, please, because to me it does indeed seem somewhat unusual to offer a co-conspirator's testimony as expert testimony. I mean, you claim that her expertise was based on her extensive involvement in real estate sales in Gary, and therefore was within the bounds of the rule on expert witnesses. But the fact of the matter is that most, if not all, of her involvement pertained to fraudulent transactions. And it's sort of like saying that someone who robs banks is an expert in withdrawing money from banks. I mean, do you know of any other case in which a criminal was labeled as an expert in the non-criminal forms of transactions? I mean, I understand, you know, a third-story man coming in and saying, well, this is what we... or a jewel thief coming in and saying, this is what we jewel thief... But this, I've not seen this in 29 years.
To use your analogy, if the bank robber had been an employee of the bank, and if the scheme to defraud the bank was complicated, and in order to explain to the jury how the scheme was executed, the bank robber would necessarily have to explain how the bank processes normally work, I think then it would be appropriate to notice up that witness if they were going to testify against, say, a co-defendant as an expert. And what we did
as
in this case... As an expert, that's what we gave notice, so that she could offer expert testimony if necessary. In my experience in the past, I've had situations where experts, without notice given, witnesses weren't allowed to give expert testimony, so it was a precautionary measure. The government had another witness who we intended to call as an expert. Her name was Ms. Vavel,
right.
And she's in our expert notice. When defense counsel didn't notice up any experts, we decided that we could rely on Ms. Chandler to explain to the jury how a normal real estate closing goes and then how these particular fraudulent real estate closings, in contrast, were executed. She was a very credible witness, and if I could bring Ms. Chandler as an exhibit in this courtroom, you would see she's very knowledgeable about the mortgage industry, and she did a great job explaining to the jury how a normal real estate...
What was her sentence?
Yeah.
She has not yet been sentenced, Your Honor.
Oh. She's still cooperating?
Wherever she's going.
Your Honor, she has cooperated with law enforcement. We have prosecuted 3 or 4 additional mortgage fraud cases as a result of information provided by Ms. Chandler. She will eventually...
So is she still cooperating? Is that why she hasn't been sentenced yet, that she's still...
She hasn't been sentenced yet because we had additional defendants in this case who had not yet pled and who have we have some contested sentencings coming up where she's anticipated to testify at those sentencing hearings. So we've asked the court to hold off on sentencing her until the end.
You know, Mr. Crossey claims that the government thought that Twaya or Twa Lisa
Toy.
Mm-hmm. Toy. Oh. Toy Lisa, Mark, and Beatrice Bingich were complicit in the fraud, then it was Brady error not to disclose that to him. I wonder how you respond to that.
Judge, all of the information regarding these witnesses was disclosed to defense counsel, all of their prior statements. So Mr. Woodward and the defendant were present during trial when Toy Lisa Mark, in fact, testified. And in her testimony, she explained she was at the closing. The defendant was there sitting next to her. They put the HUD-1 statement in front of her. She looked down. She saw that on the HUD-1 statement, it showed that a deposit had been made by her in a large amount. She couldn't recall the amount at trial. And that she said to the defendant, hey, what is this? And he said, don't worry about it. We took care of it. And that, Your Honor, is evidence of her complicity in the fraud. She signed the HUD-1 statement, which at the bottom said, I agree that this is an accurate accounting of all transactions made, you know. She signed it anyway. And so in that sense, she was complicit. She was also, however, defrauded because he talked her into buying those properties because he said he would fix them up, he would find renters, and she would be able to just sit at home and watch her bank account grow. Those were his words to Toy Lisa Mark, a single mother of two and a school teacher in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Has Causey been imprisoned?
He is currently serving his sentence, yes.
He went into the women's shoe business at some point?
He did, Your Honor, come up with an idea.
This was after, wasn't it?
It was. Yes. He talked another woman into giving up her life savings and her husband's life insurance that she had gotten when her husband passed away so that he could invest in this shoe idea that he had.
It isn't a photograph of the houses I care as much about at this point as a photograph of him.
As what?
As a photograph of him.
Oh, of the defendant?
Well, he was able to sweet-talk all these women.
Yes.
He has a very nice voice, yeah. And he's a decent-looking fellow.
So on this on this leader and the sentencing thing, the follow-up on the question Judge Rovner asked, so your bottom line is they may have started out as victims, but they ended up complicit.
Many of them were complicit in the fraud. Now, my office used its discretion not to prosecute them. We only prosecuted individuals who were involved in this scheme who had experience in real estate. So, for example, one of the buyers, the only buyer who was actually charged, is a woman named Eloise Blackman. She's a licensed real estate agent. She bought five homes, some of them on the same day, multiple homes on one day. She was given between $10,000 and $15,000 cash for each home that she bought. And shortly after buying them, the homes were all foreclosed upon. So she was charged criminally by my office.
And just ask you about the sentencing issue, which the opponent didn't have a chance to discuss. Wouldn't it be simpler in a case where there's ambiguity about the leadership status? Because, you know, the leadership criteria and the guidelines are pretty murky. Wouldn't it be simpler for the judge simply, if he wants to give the higher sentence because he thinks this person played an important role, even though he actually wasn't sort of a leader exactly, why not just use 3553A and say, look, I'm not sure whether he fits the leader guideline, but clearly he played a really major role in this and deserves a severe sentence.
I believe, Your Honor, that although Judge Lozano only gave three substantive reasons supporting his application of the enhancement, there was really not much more that needed to be said, because what he said was that the defendant's role was much more significant than that of a minor participant.
Well, that's clearly true. The question is whether he gets an enhancement for having been a leader.
And on that note, Judge Lozano said that he found that Mr. Causey was essential to the offense.
No, he is essential, yes, but you can be essential, and that would be certainly an argument for a heavier sentence. You can be essential without having a leadership or management role.
Yes, and I think that the primary reason and the third reason that Judge Lozano gave for giving Mr. Causey the two-level enhancement, which is the lowest enhancement you can get for being an organizer or leader, is that he had recruited most of the buyers. He recruited 5 out of the 7 buyers that were listed for the homes listed in the indictment, and it was up to Mr. Causey to decide which of the promises he made to the buyers he was going to keep. And, for example, he promised... I'm blanking on her name now, one of the buyers, he promised her he would find renters and help fix up the home, and he did find a single renter for that buyer. Other buyers, he promised he would find renters, and he didn't find any renters whatsoever.
But these people he's recruiting, they're not the crooks.
Correct.
So he's not...
But they were complicit in the fraud. Many of them. For example, Toy Lisa Marks, she's the school teacher from Milwaukee that I told you about. She was lied to by the defendant. He told her, as he told all the buyers, he would fix up these houses, he would manage them. Don't worry about the fact that you work 60 hours a week and live in Milwaukee. I'll take care of these houses for you, is what he told her. Now, when it came time for the closing, she was complicit in the fraud because she signed documents that even she knew were false. And he had promised her cash back at the closing. She didn't end up receiving the cash back, but when she looked at the HUD-1 statement, it wasn't recorded there. So she was complicit in the fraud, even though she was also defrauded by the defendant, and therefore should count as a participant.
In the sense that she's cheating the banks? Or?
Correct.
So I see. So you're treating her and several of these as sort of minor participants in the fraud, even though you didn't prosecute them. And so he has this managerial role by virtue of his recruiting them.
Exactly.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Closter. So, Mr. Woodward, would you like another minute? Or maybe time has expired. Yeah, sure.
First, I'd like to ask permission of the court to file a supplemental appendix with those 9 exhibits and nothing more than those 9 exhibits in it.
That's fine.
Secondly, talking about the managerial role, just to follow up on what the court was just talking about, the government now takes the position that these were victims now morphed into complicit in the fraud. There's still no control or management other than the recruitment of the innocent buyer at the beginning. There is no evidence of any control after that point that Mr. Causey exercised over anyone. So even if the government's correct in their analysis that they at some point they became complicit in the fraud, which presents other types of questions for sentencing and so forth, but even if they became complicit at some point after the fact, at the time they were recruited and so-called controlled, they were mere buyers. They weren't complicit. Therefore, he wasn't controlling our participant. So whether you follow the line of cases that say a leader has to control at least one participant, or you look at the other line of cases that only requires some control, there was no control exercised over these individuals at the time that they were complicit, and therefore
okay.
The sentencing ruling.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Woodward. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was appointed.
So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.
I will file that within the next 5 days, Your Honor.
And we thank you.